And greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Weini hao. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour, buongiorno. Sawadee karop. Half a day. Guten tag. Salam. Shalom. Peace now. How? Go vegan. Peace now. How? Go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Killitary Industrial Complex for the corporation by the bribocratic corruptocracy of the United States of Listeria, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And really, I'm shocked that in this day and age, it just strikes me as strange that people still eat meat. You know, it's the 21st century. People are still eating meat. People, I see people smart enough to program a TiVo, yet now in the year 2007, when they're hungry, they still go for the pathogen-laden, decomposing corpse rotting in their refrigerator. And they think, why, that could be rotting in my gut. Yummy. But really, it's, you need to realize that your body treats meat like it's a foreign invader. There actually was a study at UCSD a few years back saying exactly that. You know, smart enough people, I mean, they're smart enough to program their electronic devices so that the little 12 stops flashing. I mean, to me, that's really smart. People who can do that, who can program electronic equipment like that, that's amazing. Yet these people need deprogramming so that they can think clearly. I mean, I don't know. And why would they want to continue in that strange cult of animal sacrifice that dines on it? I mean, I know that meat clogs the blood vessels to the brain, so people can't really think clearly. And if they did think clearly, they'd also realize that clogging those blood vessels to the brain leads to stroke, which is the number three killer of Americans every year. And no, Al-Qaeda doesn't rank at number one. Al-Qaeda doesn't rank at number two. No, there you have it. Number one, number two, number three. All racked up to meat eating. Huh? Al-Qaeda doesn't have the resources of the meat and dairy industries to kill enough Americans to qualify for killer number one and number two and number three. You know, and as I've said in the past, and hope to say soon on Air America, by the way, I'm just working out those final details. I'm about ready to sign on the dotted line, and I thought I might know, you know, we're recording today on Thursday, and I know there's an email for me waiting back at the computer from Air America. So definitely check on the website at goveganradio.com or goveganradio.org on the progress of signing on the dotted line with Air America. Then I will need those donations to come in forthrightly. You know, we don't have the resources here either. We need your help to make this happen so that we can cover the production costs and the distribution costs to get on the Air America network, which is quite exciting to have a vegan animal rights program that would be on a major network. So I need your help and the resources, you know, and as I've said in the past, you know, those who have to be like use their guerrilla tactics like Al-Qaeda, It can do really with its limited resources is produce little amateur home version YouTube terrorvision videos. And you know, again, all that chanting has been misunderinterpreted by the Bush regime's bad intelligence. No, the chanting on those Al-Qaeda tapes was not death to Americans, death to Americans. It was Americans, keep eating what you're eating. Americans, keep eating what you're eating. Oh, and you know that bogus JFK airport plot? The plot by terrorists who had no money, no explosives, no means to blow up all the fuel lines at JFK. But they did log on to Google, huh? And yes, that could make you suspicious right there. What is it called? Google Earth with the satellite images where you can just zoom in, like right now I'm zooming right in on your front yard here on Google Earth. Yeah, that works. Okay. But still, We did get a rise in the terrorism scale from our terror vision set. What did it go up to? Did it go up to orange? Or I don't know. Maybe it was grapefruit. I'm not sure. It was citrus, though. I know the warning, the terrorist warning this week on Fox was citrus. And, you know, anything that does remind us of the fruits and vegetables we should be eating on a daily basis, 9 servings, that's a good thing. Even if it is fear-mongering politics and a bogus terrorism plot, as long as, it got me talking about fruits and vegetables, and in a few weeks, that would have gotten me talking on the whole Air American network about fruits and vegetables, just from this one terrorism plot. So apparently about the only thing the JFK terrorists were capable of doing, I think, would have been to rub poultry all over the fuel pipes and not thoroughly sanitize and disinfect the area with which it came in contact, as you you're instructed to do by your Gov Enron Ment. Yes, indeed. That's all. They could have rubbed poultry on. They could have. You know, then I guess JFK workers could have come down with salmonella, you know, when they fueled the jets. I don't know. Could happen. And what else did happen this week? Oh, yeah. Congratulations on the release to Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Dr. Death was released from prison after, after he assisted patients with patient suicide. Dr. Kevorkian, in his public statement, said that while he is no longer assisting in patient suicide, he winked at the camera and said, please watch the latest Al-Qaeda videos with the corrected, updated translations of the chanting. That from Dr. Kevorkian. And you remember what the, as a public service, the updated chants were. Americans, keep eating what you're eating. Keep eating what you're eating. Now, I'm not just saying this because,
giving the people animal burgers.
No, that would have been track one. Let's hit that again, Sharon. So I'm not just saying that because on the same CD. I'm not just saying that because.
Oh, new one. I know.
There you
I
go.
Know. And you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
No. I say it because, if you really get right down to it, meat and dairy are the suicide diet. They're the diet recommended by Jack Kevorkian. When used as directed, read the label. And in terms of killing Americans, well, as listed them, right? Number one, number two, number three. Heart disease and cancer fighting for number one, stroke in at the number third ranking. And, so if you're smart enough to program your TiVo, if you're smart enough to surf the net, the connections are irrefutable. You know, the truth is the Department of Deutschland Security should be shutting down slaughterhouses and meatpacking plants and butcher shops and believe me, meat and dairy will get you long before Al-Qaeda ever will. But if you are expecting protection from your government, well, how now, mad cow? Let's see here. I have my report from the Associated Press. I don't know if you saw this. The Bush administration said, it says Tuesday, it was a week ago Tuesday. The Bush administration said it will fight to keep meatpackers from testing all their animals for mad cow disease. We'll fight to keep meatpackers from testing for mad cow disease. The Agriculture Department tests less than 1% of slaughtered cows for the disease, which can be fatal to humans who eat tainted beef. But Kansas-based Creekstone Farms beef, wants to test all of its cows. And then you have large meat companies who are fearing that move, because if Creekstone tested all of its meat and advertised it as safe, then those big companies may have to perform the same expensive test also. And the Agriculture Department regulates the test and argued that widespread testing could lead to a false positive that could harm the meat industry. Well, imagine if it led to a true positive, huh? Which I think is what really scares them. A federal judge ruled in March that such tests must be allowed. U.S. District Judge James Robertson noted that Creekstone sought to use the same test the government relies on and said the government didn't have the authority to restrict it. But the ruling was to take effect June 1st, but the Agriculture Department said a week ago Tuesday it would appeal, effectively delaying the testing until the court challenge plays out. Mad cow disease, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy, is linked to more than 150 human deaths worldwide, mostly in Britain. And there have been three cases of mad cow disease in the United States. And but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's I mean, do you need more proof of the presence of mad cow disease in the human population than the behavior of Bush and Cheney? No, I wouldn't think so. So, but you aren't concerned about mad cow, which will be a coming plague in the future. And it is 100% fatal, and it can be just one bite of a burger. One bite of a burger can be fatal, and you may not come down with these symptoms for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Could be that one burger today. It could be that one glass of milk that you drink. And, you know, then who knows, 10 years, dementia sets in. It's 100% fatal, no cure. But we weren't really worried about mad cow this past week, were we? We were worried about tuberculosis. Okay. So let us go to the tuberculosis file. You know, everything is connected to being vegan. And I'm going to make that connection on the Air America Network when we get on there. And please visit the website, goveganradio.com, for updates. I think I'm about to sign that contract, and then I'm going to need your money right away, your tax-deductible donation. You can donate online at goveganradio.org. Milk and tuberculosis. Okay, Robert Cohen. You can go to the website notmilk.com. According to Virgil Hulse, MD, author of Mad Cows and Milkgate, half of the dairy herds in America have cows testing positive for bovine tuberculosis. One cow infects another cow with tuberculosis. And this was written in January 2005. It said, last week, America became aware of the Michigan hunter who caught bovine tuberculosis from a deer. The deer most likely ran out of the woods onto the cow's turf and became infected. This story should act as a warning to both hunter and dairy consumer. Eat body parts or drink body fluids from diseased animals and suffer the consequences. Some say that half the dairy herds in America are infected with bovine tuberculosis. Others promote the consumption of raw milk. Neither thought should be comforting to milk and dairy consumers. So just a few notes on milk and tuberculosis. And Virginia didn't call yet, has she? No, okay. All right. Infected raw milk is the chief means by which milk-borne tuberculosis is transmitted to man. That's from the Journal of Dairy Science. That goes back to the 1930s, they knew that. And then also from the Journal of Dairy Science in 1988, many diseases, such as tuberculosis, are transmissible by milk products. And then another quote, some strains of mycobacteria, similar to those that are associated with tuberculosis, have been found to survive pasteurization. That's from the National Mastitis Council, 1970. And here, a mycobacterium bovis infected dairy herd of 369 Holstein cows with lactation duration between 200 and 360 days was tested. 170 cows had positive tuberculin test results, and 199 had negative results. That's the Journal of American Veterinary Medical Association. So there you have tuberculosis showing up in the herd. There's an article that was from the New York Times a couple of years ago. Tuberculosis cases prompting warning on raw milk cheese. And apparently there were deaths and sicknesses in New York from raw milk cheese. So apparently tuberculosis can be passed through milk, and it is quite prevalent in the herd in the country here. So I suggest you go to notmilk.com. Notmilk.com for more information on that. I was going to get more into that article, but look at the font on that. I don't think I could deal with that font. I think that's a minus number font. That's why they invented negative numbers for the font that I had printed out on this. So hopefully Virginia Handley is calling in, because I want to celebrate with her that AB 1634, the California Healthy Pets Act, the mandatory spay and neuter, passed the assembly floor this past Wednesday. Befitting, on that day, that's the day Bob Barker taped his last Price is Right. And he always ended that show with please spay and neuter your pets. And the same effort to pass the assembly will now be needed in the California Senate. And you can hear the background on AB 1634 at goveganradio.com. A few weeks back, we interviewed Assemblymember Lloyd Levine, who authored AB 1634. And just one more little bit of good news here. Things are looking so much better for Maggie, the elephant in Alaska. We've been talking about her so much on this program and over the years. Well, an Associated Press story this release says, following an impassioned public outcry, the Alaska Zoo Board has decided to relocate the state's only elephant to another state under certain conditions, the board president said Wednesday. So they're saying every effort will be made to expedite a move for Maggie. You know, Maggie, Alaska is not really a part of Africa, and Maggie is the only elephant in Alaska. And, you know, it's kind of brutal for her in the winter there. They brought in a treadmill for her to get exercise. Elephants would normally roam 30 miles a day in their natural habitat. I think there was a... Was there a quote here from Dr. Elliot Katz? Anyway, they're trying to determine if Maggie is healthy enough to move and travel. You know, she was down a number of hours a couple of weeks ago. We reported that on the show. Required 17 firefighters from Anchorage to help lift her. Dr. Elliot Katz, president of In Defense of Animals, said the zoo has procrastinated too long. He said he's greatly concerned about Maggie's condition after viewing recent photographs in which she looked like she has lost weight. Quote, I'm pleased the zoo is considering the need to do this, but they need to do it as quickly as possible because they have endangered her life, he said. I just hope they haven't waited too long. There's no doubt in my mind that having her stay there is a death sentence, end quote. So it looks like there could be positive results for Maggie. We hope so. Our thoughts are with her. And I want to thank you for listening. It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden. We will continue, hopefully, with Virginia Handley. If not, later in the hour, Colleen Patrick Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Thank you for not eating animals, for not wearing animals, for not buying products tested on animals. Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps. Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps. Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps. Say that three times fast. Then eat your words, because Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps are really delicious and perfect for dips or topping or snacking right out of the bag. Invite Mr. Crisper's to lunch or to your next party, to your next potluck. The vegan varieties are sea salt and pepper, barbecue, and new multi-seed. Made with organic brown rice from California, Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps. That's Mr. Crisper with a K, and the crisps are with a K. No wheat gluten, no cholesterol or trans fats, but plenty of taste. Asian cultures have enjoyed the healthy benefits of rice snacks for thousands of years. Now you can enjoy Mr. Crisper's Baked Rice Crisps. Look for the vegan varieties, sea salt and pepper, barbecue, and new multi-seed, available at your natural foods market, Sam's Club, and select grocery stores everywhere. And select grocery stores everywhere.
Yeah, look, Penguins are giving the people animal burgers.
Oh, we would hope not. What they should be giving the people are Sunshine Burgers. And Sunshine Burgers have been around since 1983. And it's your turn to discover the delicious simplicity of organic vegan ingredients with protein-packed Sunshine Burgers. Protein from the sunflower, energy from the sun. Sunshine Burgers, simply delicious. From simple ingredients like the original certified organic ground raw sunflower seeds, brown rice, carrots, herbs, and sea salt. Delicious. Or try the organic zesty Southwestern Sunshine Burger with ground raw sunflower seeds, brown rice, carrots, black beans, bell peppers, cilantro, garlic, jalapeno, cumin seeds, onion, and sea salt. Magnifico. Look for Sunshine Burgers in the frozen food section of your natural foods market. It's the barbecue season. Barbecue Sunshine Burger. There is a barbecue Sunshine Burger with natural smoke flavor. No soy, no wheat, gluten-free Sunshine Burgers. And they're the gourmet burger since 1983, oven-baked, pre-cooked, just heat and serve. That is Sunshine Burger.
Meat eaters destroy the earth.
And that means global warming. So remember that, G8, that the real solution to global warming is to go vegan. Okay, and once you go vegan, you're on your healthy path. Maybe you have some health issues that you need to address, and you want to consider Himalayan goji juice. Check out the website. It's govegan.freelife.com. govegan.freelife.com. Goji means happy, and it's been known for thousands of years in Asia, fighting depression, longevity, and there is proven cancer protection. There were recent studies with Lycium Barbarum at Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York related to remission. So definitely check out the website, 90-day money-back guarantee, whether you order a bottle or a case. Go to govegan.freelife.com, govegan.freelife.com. Dr. Earl Mindell says it's his most amazing health discovery in 40 years of studying nutrition. govegan.freelife.com. There's the mic. Okay, got it. All right. No problem. No problem. There we go. I'm Sharon is getting on-job training today with my very complicated program log. This has put veteran broadcasters into retirement, drinking heavily, following along. Well, I don't hear from Virginia. This is the second week in a row that she'll be turning on the program on the Quake at 9 p.m. on Sunday, hearing me talk about, where's Virginia? I wanted to her to talk about the kangaroo bill last week. A lot going on in the California session regarding legislation. Perhaps she will still call in. But right now we have Colleen Patrick-Goudreau of, Compassionate Cooks. And Colleen, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm well. How are you?
Great, great, great. Well, it's great to have you here today. And I thought that maybe we would give people around the Bay Area some suggestions. You know, we talk about going vegan all the time on this program and all the reasons for it. But I think we should examine food a little more closely. And when one finally decides, yes, I want to go vegan, I often hear, well, now what do I eat? So maybe you're a good person to turn to, and your website is a good website to investigate for this. And you conduct monthly cooking classes in the Bay Area, and that's a good idea too. So what are you up to?
Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly why I do what I do. I've been an activist for many years, and as I hit the streets and, you know, raise awareness about these issues, the common questions that I get are, what do I eat? Where do I shop? What do I buy? What about when I go to my family's house? What about holidays? What about eating out? I mean, all the practical questions about this lifestyle. And so I started teaching cooking classes about 7 years ago, formally 7 years ago, in the Bay Area, in Oakland. And I actually teach all around the Bay Area, but I do my own classes monthly. And we do different themes every month. We do Thai. We're doing Southwestern and Mexican coming up on June 16th. We do a class just on tofu and tempeh. We do Japanese. We do Chinese. But it's really filling a gap for a lot of people, because once you know why you want to make the change, it's really helpful to find out, okay, now how do I do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I try not to scare people away too much. I do initially say, well, you've had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before, so you've at least brushed up against the vegan diet, you know? So it's
Well, that's right. I mean, you're being facetious, but there's actually something to that. Something that I always say to people is that you eat vegan all the time, you just don't call it vegan. You know, you eat fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and beans and mushrooms and herbs and spices. Those are all plant foods. You just don't put them in the box called vegan.
Right, right. So, and how long are you vegan, and how did that happen?
I have a little frog in my toes. I've been vegan for about 8 years. I didn't eat land animals before that, and it happened to me about, 17 years ago, I guess, about now, is when I read Diet for a New America. That was my eye-opener for me. I grew up on the East Coast and ate everything that was put in my mouth. I had no idea what I was eating. I didn't have a choice about what I was eating, like most children. And my father owned ice cream stores, so I had a lot of ice cream and a lot of animal products. And I had dogs, and I had animals that I loved, and I would take care of animals. And that kind of innate compassion that most children have is what I had. I wanted to help an animal or anybody who was suffering. I wanted to intervene on their behalf. And I had no idea that I was being fed the very same animals that were on my clothing, the animals that were on, you know, pictures on my walls, the animals that were in the books that were read to me, the animals that were in the zoos that I was brought to. I had no idea, because we create this kind of schizophrenic attitude about animals in our society. So when I read Diet for New America, it was the first time I had ever seen any of the images of the way animals are raised, any of the horrific acts against them. I'd never seen them at all. So it really just kind of hit me pretty hard, and I didn't want to be part of it. It was kind of a logical response. Okay, I don't want to be part of this, and I stopped eating land animals. And I started doing a lot of research, and I wanted to find out everything I could about this issue, and I started on my own journey of what I call an awakening. I really believe this whole journey is a journey of awakening. And for me, the final straw was reading a book called Slaughterhouse by Gail Eisnitz, an investigative reporter who went to the very few slaughterhouses that remain. They're all consolidated to just a handful of slaughterhouses around the country, and asked the same questions to the workers. And what was very apparent to me was that whether I was eating, you know, free-range eggs or organic milk or whatever I thought I was doing to make it easier for me to sleep at night, they all wind up in the same horrific place. And it really changed everything for me, and it kind of bumped up my activism. And that's when I realized what was really needed to be filled was the cooking aspect. Now, I have a background in English literature, and writing is really the primary way I communicate this information to people. So whatever way I can, the cooking classes is certainly one of them. But it's really working. It's been amazing, and I really feel so honored to be part of this transformation for other people. I get to watch people have their own awakenings. You know, I'm sure you've seen this too. You get to be part of other people's transformations, and there really is nothing like that.
That's why I do. That's why I continue, because
exactly.
You know, I mean, I'll run across somebody who goes, "Well, you know, 6 months ago I was just going up and down the radio dial, and I stopped at your show, and I just want you to know, for 6 months I haven't had any animal products."
Exactly.
Well, that keeps me going, and then, you know, people will introduce me to someone and go, "This was like the biggest meat eater you couldn't believe, you know." And
yeah.
He listened to your show, and I mean, all of our arguments, you know, there's no argument that can beat going vegan, and we have the best food. We have the best food, so
yeah.
Don't we? Right?
Well, I really think that, and you know, some vegetarians might disagree, but I really think, because I mean, I've spoken to thousands of people, and I've seen this happen again and again. First of all, I don't believe people don't change. I really can't stand when people say, "Well, people don't. They don't change. They don't." I see people change every day. I see people change. I don't believe you're too old to change or too young to change. I don't care where what your background is. I don't care where you grew up. People change. And I think one of the things that I find really interesting about this is just the kind of blocks we have and the lies we tell ourselves to keep doing it, because I kind of think that most people are just sitting on the fence and they're just ready for a push. And for some people, it's going to be a radio show that they hear. For some people, it's going to be something they read in the paper. For some other people, it's going to be just looking into the eyes of an animal. I mean, it's going to come in a number of different disguises. But I feel almost like everyone's ready. They know they're ready, and that's they don't want to know, because if they get that one little conscious push, they know that they're going to want to make a change. And I think it's the change, it's the fear of change that they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And which is amazing to me, because I hear a lot of people say, "Oh, but vegan, that's like so limiting. That's so, how do you, you know, that's just so, how do you do that? It's so limiting." And I think my experience is that being vegan is about exploring. It's about being willing to know. It's about being willing to look. It's about evolving, taking responsibility. It's about being open. It's not limiting at all. And people who say, "I don't want to know, don't tell me," to me, that's restrictive. That's a lot more limiting than being willing to take responsibility for animal suffering, for the devastation to the environment, and certainly for our own health. I mean, I think people are also afraid to even take responsibility for their own health. We've been, you know, kind of taught that you just take a quick fix and everything will be okay. So I think there's a big difference between being open and being willing to look and not being willing to look.
Right. And somewhere along the line, you decided that activism should involve cooking. I mean,
you can see I have very, very serious training with a master's in English literature. So you absolutely have to be trained in the culinary arts to be able to do this. So I'm warning all your listeners. Yeah, I mean, I had no idea it was going to be cooking. I really did not think it was going to be cooking. I was not prepared for that at all, but I liked to cook, and I knew what I was doing in the kitchen. And because I saw that people really had that need, I just started teaching the classes. And my motto is, if it tastes good, people will eat it. I mean, it really comes down to eating familiar, good food that fills people up. I mean, that's why a lot of people can, you know, feed the vegetarian foods to their non-vegetarian partners, and they never know the difference, because if it tastes good, it's about the flavor, it's about the texture, it's about the familiarity.
Sure.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Right. I've had a lot of people say to me, "Oh, that's vegan? Wow. Well, if that's vegan, then I can eat vegan then."
Exactly. I mean, it's so sad that we have this kind of notion that vegan is so horrible, so that when we actually have something that is vegan, we're so shocked. And like I said, it's food that we're already eating. I mean, when people say to me, "What do you eat? What do you eat? You must not." And I said, "I don't have time to tell you what I eat. I can tell you what I don't eat. There's like five things I don't eat. You know, that's it. But I don't have time to tell you all the thousands of plant species that are available to us."
Right. Yeah. No, it just seems so bizarre, because, I mean, here they are. They go, "Ooh, a piece of broccoli." And I go, "Ooh, you know, a pig's rear end on your plate."
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, it's just, things are such, you know, so turned around. So
yeah.
So what are your favorite vegan food? You know, what are your favorite dishes yourself?
Well, actually, it's a good question. One of the things I do, I have a podcast. Also, it's called Vegetarian Food for Thought. People can find it on iTunes, or they can just go to CompassionateCooks.com and they can click on listen to the podcast. And one of the episodes, I have 43 episodes as of today, and one of the episodes is called My Five Favorite Foods. Now, these are individual foods, they're not necessarily dishes, but my five favorite foods, I hope I remember this, are kale. And I know a lot of people are afraid of kale, but kale is fantastic and delicious, and it's one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. Steam up some kale, of course, add some garlic and maybe some red pepper flakes, and it's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I find that if I make a soup and then right at the very end when I'm turning it off, you know, turning the flame off, and I put kale in then, and, you know, it just... just,
absolutely,
you know, moisturizes enough to where it's just so totally delicious. I love
absolutely.
Kale. I love kale.
It's so fantastic. And I mean, and you know, I grew up with everything boiled to death. I did not like kale when I was growing up. I didn't like any of the green vegetables because my poor mom, you know, boiled everything to death. Most of us experienced that with the spinach and the broccoli and the asparagus. So for me to say that kale is one of my favorite foods now, it certainly wasn't one of my favorite foods, you know, 10 years ago. Quinoa is another unfamiliar food to most people. It's a grain. It's a Peruvian grain. It's spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A, and it's a fantastic grain that you could use the same way you use brown rice for stir fries, etc., or you can just make a tabbouleh salad, for instance. Instead of using bulgur wheat, you could use quinoa, or you can do something like a breakfast quinoa where you add some, you know, brown sugar, cinnamon, raisins, dates, and kind of make it more of an oatmeal type of breakfast food. But quinoa is an example of a plant food that has all of the amino acids because people are so obsessed with protein in our country. It's one of the examples of a complete protein in the plant kingdom, and it cooks in 15 minutes. So it's a really fantastic, delicious, beautiful little grain.
Mm-hmm.
Blueberries is another one of my favorite foods. I have a fruit smoothie every morning for breakfast. I actually can trace, if I have a bad day, I can trace it back to the fact that I didn't have my smoothie. It always comes back to my smoothie. So I have a blueberry smoothie with bananas, orange juice, some non-dairy milk, rice milk, almond milk, oat milk, hazelnut milk, soy milk, whatever non-dairy milk you want to put in it. And that's my other favorite. And then another favorite is tempeh, which a lot of people don't know about. It's a soy-based food. It's a whole soy food, just like tofu is, and it's fermented soybeans with rice, and it's just little cakes. It's an Indonesian food, and you can, you know, grill it, stir-fry it, steam it, and it's a really fantastic, very hearty, nutty food. It's really fantastic. And then my last favorite food is tea, because I drink a lot of green tea. I drink kind of pots and pots of tea all day, so
mm-hmm.
The tea is my other favorite.
Well, good. Don't drink Lipton tea, though.
Not Lipton. No, I don't drink
Lipton. Lipton tests on animals.
Yeah,
you know? It's so bizarre. I'm going to try to get to the story a little bit later on still. I'm in a state of shock sometimes. You know, we had to deal with fruit juice vivisectors, and it turned out that Coke and Pepsi were testing on animals, and, you know, they've caved in, you know, to pressure, and they're going to stop. But Lipton is still testing. It's very bizarre what goes on there. Now, also, we're talking to Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, Compassionate Cooks, and your favorite thing to do is debunk vegetarian myths, right?
Yeah.
So is that that's a good, you know, avocation? It's a good hobby, right? So
right.
A few of the myths that you like to debunk in particular. You just mentioned protein, and I just always, you know, that's just...
That's a fun one. Yeah, one of the things I say in my cooking class is I ask people if they've ever heard of heart disease. Most have. I've heard that, asked if they've ever heard of cancer. They have diabetes. They have high blood pressure. Anybody know anybody with high cholesterol? Everybody has. And then I ask if anybody knows anyone with kwashiorkor. And everyone goes, huh? What's kwashiorkor? I never heard of kwashiorkor. And I said, well, kwashiorkor, that's a scientific term for protein deficiency. Don't you know anybody with kwashiorkor? Because everyone's so obsessed with protein, you'd think you would know someone with kwashiorkor. You know, we don't have a kwashiorkor ward in any hospital here in the United States. And I remind people that we don't have diseases of deficiency here in the United States. We have diseases of excess.
So there aren't vegans like crawling through the streets going, protein,
right?
Protein.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, one of the things I ask them too is, what does it look like? What does protein deficiency look like? And they don't know. And, you know what protein deficiency looks like if you've ever stayed up late at night and you see the PSAs on television for the starving children in different parts of Africa. They have distended, swollen bellies. They have discolored skin. They don't get enough protein because they don't get enough food. We don't have that problem here. As long as you're eating a variety of foods, you're getting plenty of protein. It's one of these myths that has just perpetuated over decades, and it has been debunked for decades and decades. We are obsessed with protein.
Well, that's the only thing that meat and dairy have. So it's
protein
easy to
fat,
see. Yeah, so it's easy to see why that would be promoted, but
that's true.
And I had Dr. T. Colin Campbell on this program, who did the China study, and he says 70 to 80% of fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein and not much of it. So actually, animal protein is quite harmful, and vegetable protein is quite beneficial.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things I do in debunking the myths about vegetarianism, and we're talking about veganism specifically, I use that as an umbrella term, is to turn the tables. Because, you know, there's all these myths that get perpetuated, and vegans, you know, I do think we have kind of an obligation to answer with integrity and truth when we're asked these questions. I know it can be tiresome because we're asked them all the time, but my theory is that that person who's asking you may be asking this question for the very first time, and I think it's important that we answer honestly. And for those who are asking with, you know, facetiously or they really don't care, then you can kind of figure that out if they're just trying to be, you know, just trying to get your goat. I love goats, by the way.
They can't have my goat. Sorry,
right,
not for
exactly.
sale.
That's
and
right. I love goats. Yeah. So one of the things I encourage people to do is turn the tables, and if people say something like, "Where do you get your protein?" and I say, "Protein. That's no problem. Where do you get your vitamin C, your vitamin E, your lycopene, your lysine, all of these antioxidants that most people are deficient in?" Turn the tables, because there's no problem with deficiency of protein, but there is a problem with people not getting their calcium. And I'm talking about non-vegetarians, people who are drinking gobs and gobs of cow's milk. And that was one of the most striking things I ever heard T. Colin Campbell say, was that casein, which is the milk protein that most of us are, you know, most of many people are consuming, despite the fact that they're not bovines, is the number one carcinogen that people come in contact with every day because of the amount of animal protein, the casein in that stuff. And it's just amazing how that doesn't make people sit up and go, "Oh my God,
yeah,
that's dangerous. This is dangerous stuff we're putting in our bodies."
Totally, yes, indeed. So, you have a cooking class next Saturday, right?
I do.
Yes,
next
okay.
Saturday on the 16th, we're doing Southwestern and Mexican cuisine. I can tell you in just a minute what the menu is.
Okay, very good.
The menu is, we have a three-bean chili, a polenta and pine nut stuffed red peppers, spicy seitan tostadas, ensalada de frijoles, and chili cornbread muffins. And I should just say, if I may, that I also have a cookbook coming out in October, which is called The Joy of Vegan Baking, Compassionate Cooks, Traditional Treats and Sinful Sweets, and that's coming out in October. And if people go to the website, they can join the mailing list to hear about it.
And the website is?
www.compassionatecooks.com.
And you have a DVD, podcast, articles there. And July you'll be covering burgers for people, right, in
exactly.
the cooking class? So.
Yeah, I can't encourage people. I mean, the food is just so fantastic. We do this amazing mushroom pecan burger. We're doing falafel burgers and potato salad and lots of good stuff. So, yeah, people can check out the website. We have the schedule for the rest of the year on the website, and the menus are up for that as well. But, yeah, there's lots of information and lots of resources on the website as well.
Great, Colleen. Well, you're doing great work, and, you know, the way to the people's heart is through the stomach, you know.
That's right.
So we'll look forward to your book in October, The Joy of Vegan Baking. Maybe we should experiment on some humans when it comes out to see, you know, what those recipes turn out to be. Huh? So.
Sounds great. I love it.
Excellent. Okay. And in 30 seconds left, about anything we missed that you wanted to cover?
You know, the only thing I ask people is to just stay open. I hear from some people who say that, you know, they could give up everything, but they couldn't give up cheese or whatever it is. It's usually cheese. And so I say, well, give up everything but cheese. At least start somewhere. My motto is, don't do nothing because you can't do everything. Do something, anything.
Absolutely. Okay. We start with, you know, people say, well, I give up red meat. Okay. As if the color matters, but okay, that's a start,
right.
You know, or
start somewhere.
Go vegan one day a week or, go vegan permanently as of right now. I'm not going to spend time on a radio show and not be direct, right? What do we want? We want you to go vegan. Thanks, Colleen Patrick Goudreau. And again, the website is
CompassionateCooks.com.
Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And I continue now. It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com, GoVeganRadio.org. Programs archived, podcast. And who knows, by now, I'm recording this program on Thursday. And who knows, by now, maybe tomorrow, Friday, I will have signed a contract with Air America. So the future is in the past. Days of future past, the Moody Blues. I may have signed the contract, but I wouldn't know it right now. I may have signed the contract a couple of days ago with Air America. But go to the website. It's goveganradio.com or goveganradio.org. I'll let you know. And then we will have to collect the money necessary for distribution costs and costs of production. And then we're on a major network with the vegan animal rights message. What do we want? Animal liberation. When do we want it? Now. It's been a year since the outrageous eviction of the South Central Farmers in Los Angeles. This coming Wednesday, June 13th, beginning at 6:30 p.m., there will be a vigil at the corner of Martin Luther King Boulevard and Alameda Boulevard. And the vigil is an encampment reunion, potluck, slideshow, and more. For further information, call 626-484-5223. 626-484-5223. I was so involved with efforts to save that farm. It was heartbreaking. Yes, that was where Daryl Hannah was up the tree, Julia Butterfly Hill. We had Dennis Kucinich come out there, Ralph Nader. But to no avail, because we need another warehouse in South Central L.A. Who cares if the people don't have access to healthy food? Huh? Memorial services will be held to celebrate the life of animal activist and actress Gretchen Weiler on Saturday, June 23rd. And arrivals will be at 4 p.m., the memorial service at 4:30, and the reception at 5:45 at the Paramount Theater, which is 5555 Melrose Avenue in Hollywood. And you would enter through the Bronson Gate, but you do have to RSVP to attend. And so you would call 818-501-2275, extension 20, with your name and phone number, so you can RSVP. You can also RSVP by email, contact@hsushollywood.org. contact@hsushollywood.org. Again, the phone number, 818-501-2275, the memorial service for Gretchen Weiler, Saturday, June 23rd. Okay, from In Defense of Animals, No Kill Seminar in Los Angeles, Saturday, June 30th. Save the date. In Defense of Animals will host the seminar No Kill Now on June 30th. The seminar will focus on various programs that together can make Los Angeles a no-kill city and how you can get involved in making it happen, said IDA Regional Director Bill Dyer of this collaborative effort, quote, "By joining together, we can accelerate our efforts to make Los Angeles a no-kill city that is ahead of its time, setting a positive example for communities all over the country to emulate. Please join us at the seminar and bring your friends." Again, No Kill Now Seminar, Saturday, June 30th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., the West Hollywood Auditorium, 647 North San Vicente Boulevard in West Hollywood. And, okay, so let people know. You can call IDA at 310-301-7730. 310-301-7730. Again, No Kill Now Seminar, Saturday, June 30th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., West Hollywood Auditorium, 647 North San Vicente Boulevard. Oh, I'm feeling so good right now because I'm wearing my Earth Vegan footwear, the Cross Trainers. I'm actually running again. Angel the Wonder Dog, 92 pounds, has me running too. Who's walking whom here? And thanks to Joy at All Vegan, 4669 Park Boulevard, University Heights in San Diego, for my new Earth Vegan footwear. You can get yours from her. You can go to allveganshopping.com. And the Animal Rights 2007 National Conference is coming up in Los Angeles, July 19th through the 23rd at the Westin LAX Hotel. It's the world's largest and oldest animal rights conference. Hundreds of sessions, including workshops and rap sessions and reports 80 speakers from all sectors of the animal protection front plans to defeat the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, that illegal, unconstitutional law signed by Bush. Celebrity and Activist Awards, AR Hall of Fame. Oh, I'm speaking at the event, huh? Better think up something soon, huh? Vegan meals, wonderful event. So go to farmusa.org, farmusa.org, and mention Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and you get a $20 discount off of your registration. So mention Go Vegan with Bob Linden and a $20 discount for you. Okay, Sharon, let us go on to spot break two.
M-E-A-T-S-T-I-N-K-S. Meat stinks.
That it does. Fish does too, doesn't it? As it decomposes. Is your omega-3 a little fishy? Too bad if it is, because then you're actually depleting the oceans of marine life, and fish oils often contain mercury and heavy metals and PCBs and other toxins that accumulate in marine environments. But now you can benefit from the original vegan omega-3 DHA supplement, Omega Zen 3 from Nutru. You know, people are under this misconception that they're getting their DHA, omega-3 DHA from fish oil, when it really originates in the algae being eaten by the fish. The fish don't make it, huh? DHA is a long-chain omega-3 fatty acid considered a critical nutrient, one of the main components of the brain required for functioning of all neural systems, including vision. In studies, low levels of DHA have been found in persons with heart disease and high blood pressure and cancer and Alzheimer's and depression, ADD, insomnia, stress, hyperactivity, dyslexia. But with DHA supplementation, those conditions improve. It's Omega Zen 3 from Nutru. Omega Zen 3 from Nutru. Check it out at Whole Foods or go to the website, Nutru.com, N-U-T-R-U.com. It's a vegan company. It's a vegan company. You want to support a vegan company like Nutru, huh? Who has your values in mind, ethical treatment of animals, utilization of sustainable plant sources, energy conservation, recycling, less dependence on petroleum, and saving the oceans and saving the fish.
McDonald's, yuck.
Yeah, don't go there when you can go to Truly, Truly Vegan, a wonderful vegan restaurant in Hollywood, 5907 Hollywood Boulevard. The phone number is 323-466-7958, 323-466-7958. Says it right on the menu, we want to make a positive and healthful contribution to society. By using products that are animal-free, we're making a statement to ourselves and others that we are conscientious eaters, acting toward the greater good of all beings, and the greater good really tastes good, too. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, pancakes and chicken, that's a very popular dish there. Of course, the chicken isn't made out of a bird at Truly. It's a vegan restaurant. Great soups and salads and sandwiches and burgers and wraps and veggie meats and curries. And really, I think you're going to be pretty happy there at Truly. Try the vegan shabu and the vegan sushi. And you can check the website. It's trulyvegan.net, trulyvegan.net. And again, 5907 Hollywood Boulevard, right at the Hollywood Boulevard exit off the 101 freeway. Okay, now on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, Animal News and Views, sponsored by Last Chance for Animals. Go to lcanimal.org, lcanimal.org. Yes, from Last Chance for Animals, we had the Dealing Dogs documentary. Wonderful work that is. Well, you know, the weather's getting warmer, you're getting thirstier. Yet who would have ever imagined that those innocent beverages on the supermarket shelf had a hidden ingredient: animal experimentation and animal cruelty. You know, some months back, we revealed the shocking news about fruit juice vivisectors. Who would imagine such a thing? Well, Welch's and Ocean Spray and Palm, not so wonderful pomegranate juice, all were experimenting on animals to get test results. So, you know, they make health claims about their products. And, well, under pressure, Welch's and Ocean Spray and eventually Palm agreed to end animal experimentation. And so I thought, well, okay, the end of beverage vivisectors, a strange cult, but that's it for them, huh? Right? Wrong. According to PETA, both Pepsi and Coke were involved in animal experimentation. Now, Pepsi was the first to bow to PETA pressure and end experiments on animals. Now, Coke is following Pepsi's lead. Prior to hearing from PETA, Coke has had a history of invasive and deadly animal experiments. Coca-Cola cut open chimpanzees' faces to conduct taste tests, and they force-fed chemicals to rats to test caramel color, an experiment not required by any law. Coca-Cola was funding a deadly experiment at Virginia Commonwealth University involving sour taste reception in rats. Now, I don't know, but I'm just guessing that, you know, I don't know, what tastes sour to a rat, you know, given their palates are more refined to the, well, the souring of trash, perhaps. I just don't think a sour taste test on a rat is going to predict my palate's reaction to a sophisticated beverage like Coca-Cola when it might be sour. I think it would be more appropriate, you know, to do a sour taste test. What? Oh. Why, I'll do it on a lobster, huh? That might be better. We get just as you know, same same credible results, huh? You know, do it on an alligator. Sour taste test of Coca-Cola. Is that bizarre? You know, what could that? I don't know. What could Coca-Cola be thinking? Does Coca-Cola really care how its products taste to rats? I mean, really. Well, maybe they are. You know, maybe that's one of its biggest consumers. You know, the more the rats get at it at night, you know, maybe more the more you have to order, huh? So we can't have Coca-Cola tasting sour to rats, huh? You know, so I guess we have to see if it's sour to rats. You know, and cutting open chimpanzees' faces to do taste tests, is that bizarre? I mean, so they're screaming in pain, you know, because their cheeks are missing, but they're gonna stop for a moment and say, oh, pleasant-tasting beverage we have here, huh? Ooh, 2.5 minutes left, huh? This is a rather pleasant-tasting beverage we got here. Sure wish I had my cheeks back. Beverage is a little sour, though. Coca-Cola, under pressure from PETA now, is backing down from animal tests, saying it supports alternatives, yada, yada, yada. So now it is time for Lipton Tea to join us in the civilized world and end animal experimentation with its products. It's tea. It's tea, you know? So what do we have? Why do we need experiments? I mean, did the fish in the Boston Harbor survive the Boston Tea Party? So you know, maybe with a little more anxiety, but that could have been over what they saw coming in the future. Coming population. But anyway, could you please contact Lipton Tea? Its maker is Unilever. The group vice president, president of the Americas, is Michael Polk, P-O-L-K, Unilever, and the mailing address is 700 Sylvan Avenue, S-Y-L-V-A-N, Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, E-N-G-L-E-W-O-O-D, Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, 07632. Phone numbers, yes, you can call him at 201-894-4000, 201-894-4000, or do a toll-free, 877-995-4483. The fax, 201-871-8257. And the email comments at Unilever.com. If you miss any of this, you can always go to the website, goveganradio.com or goveganradio.org. The EU has announced that non-human methods will likely soon replace rabbits for testing chemicals that could be irritating. Are we done? I'm out of time, totally? Like, it's 59? Like, there?
Like 30 seconds.
like 30 seconds maybe left. Okay, anyway, the EU is going to be saving many rabbits by moving to alternative tests. I will get to that next week. Please go to the website goveganradio.com for any updates related to Air America. I need you to send in your tax-deductible donations to support this program. Go to goveganradio.com, goveganradio.org. Please stop eating animals. Is there still time? No?